Dissident Island recorded this radio interview with Tom and Jamie from Corporate Watch for its show, which was broadcast on February the 4th. To hear the whole show, you can find the archive at dissidentisland.org.
Okay, so it's Brian here, and you're Patrick. Tom and Jamie, hey guys.
Hello, you alright?
Hey. Hi.
So, Tom and Jamie are here to talk to us about non-lethal weapons, and they're here from Corporate Watch. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
That's right. I'm Jamie, and we've come from Corporate Watch, which is a corporate critical research collective looking into the manifestations of corporate power, abuses of corporate power itself across all different industries, whether it be farming or industries involved in climate destruction. Obviously today particularly going to be talking about the military industrial complex.
And Corporate Watch tries to provide information for action for grassroots campaigns, information for activists, which is what we're trying to do today.
And you've recently written a report about the use of non-lethal weapons, specifically in this case in the West Bank in the village of Bilin. Would you like to start by just giving us a bit of background to why you wrote the report and the idea of non-lethal weapons?
Sure. The idea that is sold about non-lethal weapons is that they can be used as an alternative, as a lesser evil, if you like, to lethal force. While we're talking about non-lethal weapons, the ones that spring to mind immediately are the use of CS gas, which is tear gas, using rubber bullets or rubber-coated steel bullets instead of live ammunition, as it were, and then sort of to the more bizarre, more recent inventions, which are sound bombs and chemical agents that make people very nauseous, strange substances that burn people's skin, sort of thing. There's research going into the use of laser lights and that sort of thing that again make people nauseous or make people disorientated, and those are the sort of things that we're looking at when we're talking about non-lethal weapons.
So just in terms of just to briefly stay on the sort of the idea of less lethal weapons and stuff like that, it, as a growing industry, we talked about the semantics of the phrase less lethal. And in this growing industry, should we not be reclaiming language around the idea of something like non-lethal?
I think we definitely should. I think every time you hear the phrase less lethal, the the response to that should be less lethal than what? The marketing, and I don't just mean in terms of making governments buy these products, but the insidious marketing that makes us accept something as just another product and helps us to legitimize them for the companies. It's all that terminology is couched very much in the terms of harm reduction. And I think in that there is an implicit idea that lethal force against any population is inherently acceptable. If we are to be grateful for the fact that these weapons are less lethal than live ammunition, than lethal arms, then we've already been told that our lives and our physical safety are at the behest of whatever state body it is, whether it's the military or indeed the police or other civil enforcement agencies. And I think that's really, really important to remember that, and that the increased use of non and less lethal weapons against civilian populations really speaks of the dominion that we allow the state to have over our bodies and over our physical health and over the harm that we come to. And I think that really needs to be questioned before this becomes sort of an acceptable line of thinking that this is all right.
So do you think as an activist movement, should we be looking to reclaim some phrases or relabel these just all as weapons, and should we not be trying to differentiate the non-lethal or less lethal elements?
The use of words like non and less lethal, they're very much words of reduction, and what we're seeing is an expansion in the legitimacy of state violence in public order situations. Every time there is a new weapon, every time something new is used and is tried. For example, there was a sound weapon that was used in Pittsburgh year before last, I think it was. You know, that is it's called an LRAD, which is something that emits a very high pitched sound. It's incredibly loud. It's incredibly oppressive to be in its presence, to the point of painful. And that is very much an escalation in harm. It is not less than anything. It is more than violence that has been used before. And I think you're quite right. I think we have to speak about it in those terms. Otherwise, we become part of the corporate marketing, essentially.
And there's also the notion that if you were to be killed by a non-lethal weapon, it's always a mistake. It's never a murder or anything like that. It's just, you know, it's not what was supposed to happen. And we see that. We see that here, and we see that in Palestine as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about Billing and about the deaths that have been occurring there because of these weapons?
Yeah, I mean, the recent article we wrote was about Balin. That's a village in the West Bank, close to Ramallah, and for, I think, 6 and a bit years, maybe 7 years, they've been resisting against the expropriation of their land by the apartheid wall, which is taking the majority of their farmland. By carrying on demonstrating and by being a kind of a focal point for the international movement, they've been very important in the growing popular struggle in Palestine and the growing BDS movement, the growing movement for boycott, divestment and sanctions, which has been happening internationally. And because of all of that, they've experienced very high levels of repression by the Israeli army, and they've become a testing ground for non-lethal weapons, and that was the statement put out after the most recent death in Berlin on the 31st of December. They said our villages have become a testing ground for these weapons, and you know, demonstrators in Berlin are routinely attacked with tear gas. I've been to schools of demonstrations in Berlin, and every single time I've been attacked with tear gas, plastic bullets, rubber coated steel bullets. The more unusual weapons they use are different varieties of water cannons, where water cannons will be infused with dye to make the people that they hit covered in purple dye so that the army can pick them out and arrest them. One of the most popular weapons they use at the moment is the skunk weapon, or the shit cannon, which sprays foul-smelling water on demonstrators and causes people to vomit. And experiments with different levels of tear gas, different volumes of tear gas. At least anecdotally, it seems that the tear gas canisters which are being used vary in strength, probably as a direct experiment of the effect of these different types of tear gas. The companies which are developing these weapons are Israeli companies partly, but also they're international companies like CSI or Defense Technologies from the US, which I'll talk about a little bit more about later, who are wanting to develop their technologies and to use them against a population where experimenting with people's lives is something acceptable, basically. And in Berlin, on the 31st of December, a woman called Jauher Abirama was in the village of Berlin after watching part of the demonstration, which happened every week. She was standing quite a way away from where the action was, and she inhaled CS gas, and shortly afterwards she collapsed, was taken to hospital and died in hospital from the effects of the inhalation of tear gas. Jauher Abirama was the sister of Bassem Abirama, who was killed by a tear gas canister in April 2009, which was a tear gas canister from an American company called Combined Systems, CSI. He was killed while demonstrating maybe 100 metres from where his sister died, close to the Israeli apartheid wall, and a high-velocity canister was fired at him, hit him in the chest, and which opened up a hole in his chest, and he died instantly. He was one of several victims of these high-velocity tear gas canisters. Jauher Abirama's other brother, Ashraf, had been shot at close range with a rubber bullet while being detained by the Israeli army. So just the story of that one family illustrates the volume of the use of non-lethal weapons, in inverted commas, against the people of Berlin. And there's been an international call for action in anger at the death of Jawahar Abirama. There have been actions that have happened in New York, in Brighton, and in Spain. There have also been actions in Tel Aviv where Israeli activists have brought the combined systems gas canisters from the village of Berlin to the American ambassador's residency, returned them to him. There's actually, they were arrested for carrying weapons, and there's a rather ridiculous conspiracy court case going on at the moment there in Tel Aviv. And there's a call from Stop the Wall, which is the Palestinian grassroots anti-apartheid ball campaign, for actions on the 10th of February against companies involved in supplying tear gas to the Israelis. And they've mentioned these two companies, Combined Systems and Defense Technologies. Defense Technologies, they're owned by BAE, which is a company with, unfortunately, with factories and offices in almost every town around the UK. So if people want to take action in solidarity with Berlin and against these deaths, that might be a place to start. And you can find more information at www.stopthewall.org.
Should we be worried by what we're seeing in Berlin because you see that as a testing ground for what's going to happen? The sort of things we're seeing there are going to become more commonplace for other people in the world? Is that something we need to be really thinking about, or do you see actual evidence of things happening there becoming more commonplace? I mean, you mentioned kind of like the sound thing.
Yeah.
Earlier, I mean, is that one amongst many other examples? Or?
Security technologies being used in Palestine are increasingly going to be rolled out against us. I mean, Palestine's a very important testing ground for instance, drone technology which is being used in the wall. Unmanned drones are being used now by British police forces to monitor demonstrations
to monitor anybody
at all.
Yeah. And I think it's important to tie that in with the research into corporations. I do think, in answer to your question, that we're looking at sort of public spaces being increasingly dominated by these sort of securitized technologies, and because that is expanding so quickly, because it is being allowed to happen off the back of so much fear rhetoric and anti-terror and public order and all these sorts of things, that it seems to me that we're looking at a situation where the corporations are writing their own rules and they are deciding what is lethal, what is less lethal, what is non-lethal, or not at all. And I think if anything it is that the newness of it and that lack of precedent that makes it very dangerous. And a very useful way to begin resistance to that, I think, is to engage in quite detailed and thorough research of which companies are involved in doing what and who is funding whom, and so that it can be brought out of those shadows, if you like, so it isn't suddenly, we went to this demonstration and there was this weird new weapon, but to know beforehand. And the bizarre thing about securitized technologies is how proud so many companies are of what they're producing. You know, they are at the cutting edge of this and they are that, and sold in this way that, you know, you want these security technologies for your building or for your police force, and you can find out about things years in advance sometimes because there is no need for them to hide it. You know, our space is becoming so much more militarized and the line between what is civilian and what is military is becoming so blurred that I think we can be really, really well armed with information, if you like, as to what is going to happen next.
You mentioned BAE as one of the targets for if you were wanting to demonstrate against non-lethal weapons.
Yes.
But there must, I mean, Britain has got a huge arms industry. There must be other players, maybe not involved in Palestine, but involved in that general realm. Would there be other groups that you'd suggest paying a visit to?
Well, one thing I'd suggest people do this year is to take action against Defence Systems Equipment International Arms Fair in Docklands.
Dicey.
Which will be happening in September. And, you know, that's the kind of place where all of these experimental technologies and technologies where they're trying to break a new market are going to be showcased. And there's going to be a mobilisation organised by Disarm Dicey. So watch www.dicey.org for how to get involved in mobilising.
Indeed, DICEY is happy to announce this year on their website that they are going to have the largest unmanned showcase arena, I think it was called something like that, in Europe this year. So that's all the drone technologies, that's all the increase in the robotic technologies, both in terms of military applications and surveillance. So it's definitely something that they're onto and very much worth resisting.
Cool. And I guess if people want to find out more about Billing and the research that you've done, they can get your articles on the Corporate Watch website.
Yeah, www.corporatewatch.org, or for the articles about Palestine, corporateoccupation.wordpress.com, and click on the link for Billing or for non-lethal weapons, and can find the articles there.
Cool. Thank you very much for coming in to speak to us.
Thank you for having us.
Look forward to speaking to you again soon.